Chapter 67. After 3 days of confinement in the frozen darkness, the barge captives were living a different kind of terror. Roman had ordered the fading penlights to be used sparingly, so most of the time the men spent groping around in complete blackness. Initial feelings of anger and determination to escape had waned to despair in the bleak hold, where the men huddled close together to stave off hypothermia. Hope had flourished when the barge had come to a rest at the dock and the hatch was briefly thrown open. It proved to be nothing more than an inspection from several armed guards, but at least they had provided some food and blankets before their hasty exit. Roman took it as a good sign. They wouldn't be given food if they weren't intended to be kept alive, he reasoned. But now he wasn't so sure. When Bjorkes had awakened him to report a change in the sound of the icebreaker's engines, he suspected that they had reached their destination. But then the rhythmic tugging of the tow ropes had suddenly ceased while the rocking motion from the choppy seas remained. He could sense that they had been cut adrift. Seconds later, Zack's explosives detonated with a jolt. The explosion reverberated through the empty holds of the barge like a thunderstorm in a bottle. Instantly, the commandos and Polar Dawn's crew were on their feet, wondering what had happened. "Captain Murdoch," Roman called out, turning on his penlight. Murdoch shuffled forward, a haggard look to his eyes from a lack of sleep. "Speculation?" Roman asked quietly. "Sounded well aft. I suggest we go take a look." Roman agreed. Then, seeing the apprehensive look in the faces of the nearby men, he called over to Bjorkes. "Sergeant, get back to work on that hatch. I'd like some fresh air in here before breakfast." Moments later, the stocky sergeant was pounding away at the locked hatch again with his small hammer. The clanging racket, Roman hoped, would give the men a small lift while masking the sound of whatever was happening aft. Roman led Murdoch to the open stern hatchway and shined his light over the threshold. A steel-rung ladder led straight down into an empty black void. "After you, Captain," Murdoch said curtly. Roman slipped the penlight between his teeth, then grabbed the top rung and slowly started climbing down. Though not afraid of heights, he found it unnerving to climb into a seemingly bottomless black hole inside a rolling ship. The bottom rung seemed elusive, but after a 40-foot drop, he reached the base of the number one hold. Shining his light at the foot of the ladder, Murdoch appeared right behind him. A rock-solid man just over 60, the gray-bearded captain was not even breathing hard. Murdoch led the way across the hold, startling a pair of rats that somehow flourished even in the bitter cold. "Didn't want to say it in front of the men, but that sounded like an onboard explosion to me," he said. "My thoughts as well," Roman replied. "Do you think they mean to sink us?" "We'll know soon enough." The two men found another steel ladder on the opposite side of the hold, which they climbed up to a short passage that led to the number two hold. They repeated the process twice more, crossing the next two holds. As they climbed up the far side of the third hold, they could hear a distant sound of sloshing water. Reaching the last passageway, Roman scanned the number four hold with his light. On the opposite corner, they spied a small river of water streaming down the bulkhead, splashing into a growing pool below. The explosion had left no gaping hole in the side of the hull, but rather created a series of buckled steel plates that let the water seep in like a broad sieve. Murdoch studied the damage and shook his head. "Nothing we can do to slow that down," he said. "Even if we had the proper materials, it's too widely dispersed." "The water inflow doesn't look too extreme," Roman said, searching for something positive. "It will only get worse. The damage appears to be just above the waterline, but the rough seas are spilling in. As the hold fills, the barge will begin to settle by the stern, allowing more water to rush in. The flooding will only accelerate. But there's a hatch on the passageway that we can lock. If the water is confined to this hold, shouldn't we be all right?" Roman asked. Murdoch pointed overhead. 10 feet above their heads, the bulkhead ended, replaced by a series of support beams that rose several more feet to the overhead deck. "The holds are not watertight compartments," he said. "When this hold floods, it will spill over into the number three hold and keep moving forward." "How much flooding can she withstand?" "Since she's empty, she should stay afloat with two holds flooded. If the seas are calm, She might hang on with a third flooded. But once the water starts hitting that number one hold, it will be all over. Dreading the answer, Roman asked how much time they had left. I can only guess, Murdoch said, his voice turning low. I'd say 2 hours tops. Roman aimed the dimming bulb of his penlight toward the trickle of water and slowly traced it down toward the bottom of the hold. A growing pool of black water was reflected in the distance, its shimmering surface a calling card of death.